That's a theme song you just love to hear on a Thursday afternoon. And you know what it means. We're about to head in the garden and get in contact here with Ed Bajarski here to explore the garden, find out what we need to be doing this week. And if you have any questions, get those questions answered. But first, let's say thank you to the Flower Farm. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, every day but Wednesday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., with delivery available even in the evenings. 772-3464 to reach the Flower Farm. And we're pulling Ed Bajarski up on the phone lines there. Are you with us, Ed?
Oh, I am, and it's a beautiful sunny day. It is the weather we've been waiting for all summer long.
Isn't that the truth?
Or something, a little late.
I suppose better late than never. I mean, there's still work to do and sunshine to be enjoyed in that.
There's a little bit of ripening left. And, as gardeners, we are a hopeful bunch.
Yeah, that's certainly true. That's true. On my end, I'm hoping to use this little dry spell to kind of cure my potatoes there and then see what magic is under the surface to feed through the winter.
Definitely, yeah. Watching our plants in general and watching specific ones, like you say, the potatoes are a good one that we watch the leaves, see what the plants are doing to tell us whether they should be harvested or not. And, of course, hopefully you're not having issues with critters in things. I got home from my adventure up north half hour later. Here's this big, really the first bear we've seen in the yard, big old bear that I very sportsmanlike chased off with shouting and threats of dire harm or otherwise. So, and my fruit and such is protected, and carrots are protected with electric fences, although I think this weekend we're going to be doing some considerable apple harvesting and processing.
Nice. Okay, what's your game plan for apples?
Well, I'm probably going to invite some friends over because I still have applesauce and apple pies left from last year. However, it's hard to have too much of either, but we're having a hard time. The freezer is filling rapidly with a bounty from up north, too, so making room is the challenge. I guess we need to eat more and eat faster. But we will definitely be making more pies and some applesauce. And the applesauce will get a little bit of everything. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different apple trees at least that are going to contribute to the applesauce, which really is great, makes a great blend. Some are Dolgo crab apples, which are half the size of my thumb, and nice, really add nice red color to the sauce. There's the last few yellow transparents. There's some Love's Queen, there's some Liveland Raspberry, and there may be a few others that go into the mix. Whatever isn't nice enough, and even when we're slicing apples for pies, I'll throw the cores and stuff into the pot, too, to be cooked down with a little bit of apple juice, cinnamon, of course. So all of that, and then I run it through a Foley food mill or a similar squeezer, strainer-type item to get a nice consistency and take away the remaining skins and seeds out of that.
Nice, nice. And that's for your applesauce?
Yes.
Awesome. Yum. Well, that is a fun kind of work indeed. Do you have any best practices while you're working on the apple tree, just as far as how do you take the best care of your tree while you're harvesting, and
I'm definitely looking at the tree and kind of thinking ahead to pruning. I was doing some of that even earlier when I was thinning apples. Took off some of the really high, some of the high branches. So then, favoring to leave the wider spreading branches, partly for ease in future picking, and so I don't have to use so much ladders, and just the spreading and looking at the tree. Okay, I've got to open up this tree to let more light in, because I can see that some of the apples don't have the color that they could or should have if they had more sunlight getting to them. Of course, if we'd gotten more sunlight to give to them, that would have helped too, but, you know, we do what we can with what we're given. So my Williams Pride tree, which is a nice red, has nice red apples, at least on the sunny side of the tree. You can really see the difference on the shady side, on the north side of the tree, is much more green apples. So it'll basically, it'll take them longer to ripen. So they may hang there a bit longer.
Yeah, makes sense. So you might be harvesting in batches this year.
Yes, well, that's you know, in some ways that's a nice thing. Some things like the yellow transparents, they really quickly go from green, which is the better stage really for apple pies when they still have some tartness to them, to being, well, kind of a very pale yellow, and then they get very mealy and soft, which means they cook down really quickly for applesauce. And that's, I mean, the transparent part, I think, is because of this very pale colored applesauce that you get from those. So again, you can, having a blend gives you more flavor.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, right. That makes sense. You get a blend of flavors.
Exactly.
Extra sweet.
And again,
and
you know,
tart.
If you add different colors and stuff too, the Dolgo crab is great. Dolgo is a really good one also if you like to make apple jelly. Again, it's got nice color to begin with. It's got good flavor also. And again, for the jelly, usually you're not, if you're making a jam, I suppose you could run them through the squeezer. But for a jelly, normally you want to use very gently press or use a cheesecloth bag or something similar. And actually I've used in the past and perhaps this year, for jelly making, I've actually used pieces of our game bags that we, after they've been washed, of course, if we're recycling. And that's a nice consistency to, again, to squeeze the juice out of the mix, make a more clear jelly.
Mm.
You know, traditionally they say, well, after you've cooked them a little bit and using some apple juice to cook them with rather than plain water, then you just hang it and let it drip into a bowl. So then you have more clear, if you're going for the really aesthetic appeal of it, so you don't get all the fiber and that sort of thing that makes a cloudy jelly. Otherwise, you know, more fiber is good for most of us.
True, true. Okay, that's a good tip. That's a delicious little set of projects there.
Yeah, and then of course with the pies, we do them kind of assembly line fashion. So we'll get a bunch. My wife is using my mother's pie crust recipe. I think some years ago we probably published it or something like that. If they look in the archives, maybe they'll find it. Mm-hmm. But a good pie crust recipe is a rather valuable thing. And so my wife makes the pie crust, and I cut up the apples and liberally dose them with cinnamon, usually some nutmeg and some sugar, and make the pies. We'll usually cook one up at least, and then the rest go into the large gallon size or larger freezer bags, and to be saved for the winter. And they are frozen, uncooked, unbaked, and then we pop out of the freezer. Usually, then they get dusted on the top with cinnamon, sugar, and a few poke some holes into the oven. So they'll take longer to bake, obviously, than an unfrozen pie, but still, that's only maybe an hour and a half versus 45 to 50 minutes baking time for eight to nine inch pies.
Hmm. What a wonderful thing to have a stockpile of in the freezer.
Exactly. Well, yeah, if you got the oven going, and hey, let's grab a pie here, and you know, to add to our evening meal whenever that happens to be, whether that's in November or January or February, you know, sometime when get a little taste of summer.
Sometimes you just need an apple pie. Gosh.
Right.
Love
exactly. It goes well, and whatever topping that you put on your pie afterwards is optional.
Yeah. Oh, that's just wonderful to think about. Okay, so apples are largely ready to get working on. What else do you have going on?
Yeah, and so at the same time, I've also just recently ordered more apple trees for next year. So that's something worth doing if folks are interested in that. Contact the various nurseries, and if you're planning ahead for that, and I suppose thinking about planting a fruit tree or something, or two, ideally for apples at least, you want to have two apple trees for cross-pollination. So you can start doing some prep work now for the area where your trees are going to go next spring. Again, apples, cherries, and other potential fruit trees and berry bushes. So this is a good time of year to be preparing for that, making sure you've got good drainage, maybe adding some compost to the soil or some other slow release or soil amendments that bone meal or rock phosphate, green sand, throw in some seaweed into the mix. And so that way, when you get your new bare root trees next, hopefully next April or May, they're ready to go in the ground, or your location is ready to go in the ground, and you've also done your planning for the electric fence, which will follow 20 or 30 minutes later.
Yeah. Oh, so thinking of planting apple trees then, which is this is a great time of year as we're talking about the bounty of apple trees and all the fun that lasts all winter that way. What should a person think about in the planning scheme there? Like how long until an apple tree is going to be productive for a person?
Okay.
And do they need to? Is there a specific sort of base tree varietal that's going to be strong and hardy, and then do you worry about splicing on your fruit-bearing parts of the tree later? Or
right. No, that's good questions to ask of and to research for the nurseries where you get them, whether they are dwarf or semi-dwarf or full-size trees. How much space do you have? I mean, again, ideally you would have two trees, but potentially you can get trees that have multiple varieties on one tree, so then one tree is enough. So again, with something like dwarf trees, they can be planted 6 to 8 feet apart. Semi-dwarfs are going to be more in the 10 to 15 foot range, and full-size trees, you know, like the ones that at least I grew up climbing with my neighbor friends and all, you know, those are going to be 20 to 25 feet apart. So again, depending on your lot size, that's going to make a difference, how many you can put in. And some of the rootstocks may, again, if you start doing a little bit of research on those, some may have a little more tolerance for wetter conditions. Some demand very quite dry conditions. So that's important. M7 is a common rootstock semi-dwarf that does well in Southeast Alaska. M26 is another one. It's just a little smaller, but tends to want better drainage. And of course, the location, whatever your location, you need sunshine. I mean, these are not going to do well in the shade. So it should be in a sunny location. And again, if you're looking at building a fence, you know, planning for your fruit trees and berry bushes, hopefully to be in a similar area, then they can be put not too far apart, so you can get a fence around that whole very attractive place, location, to keep out the deer and the bears and the porcupines and the other assorted critters that, and maybe even two-legged pests, if you have those who don't respect boundaries.
Right. Okay, so you're saying the phrase root stock, and is that what a person buys? That's basically the tree itself, what you plant in the ground, and it's not going to be bearing your fruit, really. It's to establish the base.
But it's supporting, and it has, the root stock is really important, obviously, because it has to collect nutrients from the soil. You've got to help provide those, because we don't have very fertile soil here. So that's where, if you are able to provide plenty more nutrients, then the dwarfer trees, which are dwarf because their roots don't spread out that far, excuse me, then then you can get those in those smaller areas. So the bigger, the larger size trees, semi-dwarfs to full-size trees, are root spread out a lot farther, too. So that's worth thinking about. You were asking about timing. How long does it take to get to fruiting size? Again, the smaller trees, the dwarfer trees, tend to bear fruit sooner. I mean, it's pretty common, actually, when you get trees up from, when I get trees up from down south, they've been grown in, whether it be south of Portland or north of Seattle, in very good soil, high sun, much more sun than we get here. And a lot of times they'll have flower buds on them that first year, but we don't want to let them have fruit for a year or two because they need to grow a root system to pull in nutrients. It takes a lot of nutrients to ripen a crop of fruit. So delaying that to the point of pinching off fruit the first 2 or 3 years is important for the long-term health of the tree. And then we can let them grow. The first year have half a dozen apples or more. Second year, you know, more, hopefully. If the if everything comes together, we have good weather when the trees are blooming, so the bees will pollinate them, so fruit will set, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all of that we have to take into account. So if we, you may very well have choices from the nurseries how large a tree one can get. They may say it's 5 or 6 feet tall or 7 or 8 feet tall, or the caliper, which is the diameter of the trunk at the base, may be a half-inch caliper would be a very small tree, or it may say whip, which means it has no branches, just one little stem sticking up. That will take an extra year or two or three to get to flowering and fruiting size. They're easier to transplant, though, because of their size. You just got to be more patient.
Right. Okay, nice. Good things to think about. And really, that's a pretty quick turnaround time for, you know, if you've got kids around the house, you want to plant some apple trees with the kids as a project, and, you know, they'll be still there. You know, your kids will be hitting middle school by the time you can have them have the chore of picking the apples for you.
Right. How patient or impatient are you? You know, I mean, for some of us, yeah, we want that instant gratification, but again, it's better if we don't have, yeah, that first year or two wait. Just be patient, let them grow, and train them into the shapes and spread the branches out and carefully prune for good shape and good sun and all that sort of thing, too. So all of that will serve you well, you know, for the long term.
Perfect. Well, I think we've got a caller here. We're going to pull him into the show here. Caller on line one, you have a question here for Ed Byarski?
Yes, I do. This is Nancy Berg. Ed, how are you doing?
Pretty good, man. It's beautiful sunny day in East Alaska.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky, huh? Hey, Ed, I have a cherry tree. I planted it up by our church, and I thought it was just a decorative one. And it's been there for about 3 years. And this year we looked, and there were Bing cherries on it. And we're like, what? Anyway, it's growing really tall, and I want to prune it, but I'm not sure what time of year to prune it or, you know. I know usually you don't want to take out more than about a third. But will that cause it to not have fruit the next year, too? So when to prune it, and should we not expect fruit, is my question.
So for pie cherries, I mean, for sweet cherries generally grow larger than pie cherries do. I mean, larger, taller. And I think I'm going to get off my speakerphone.
Nice.
So you can actually take, in fact, I just recently pruned a sweet cherry tree at a neighbor's place for pretty much the reason you mentioned, that it was so tall. And so you prune it down to some of the wider spreading branches. That's, you know, and I guess think about the space that you have, of course, too. Timing for pruning is, and I've, you know, even now, and I've got some more trees. I've got to prune a few downtown Juneau. Of both apple and cherries. We're getting kind of late in the season for pruning, but the advantage of pruning this time of year versus pruning in the spring, because the trees still have all their leaves on them. Well, most of them, I guess trees are, yeah, there's a lot of alder leaves dropping here. But anyway, there's still a lot of nutrients which are stored in the tree, not having gone down to the roots yet. So by pruning some branches, some of those tall branches off, then you're going to slow the tree's growth somewhat next spring. Where if you waited until, say, March or April to prune that in the same places, same tree, that will be more stimulating because all of the nutrients of the tree are in the roots and coming up out of it as our days get longer, so that those nutrients have to go somewhere. They are going to push out more, they will stimulate more growth in the spring, which might not be what you want. So truly, summer, we're still technically summer. It feels like summer out there. Is actually a good time for pruning for size control.
Okay.
And again, I suppose the other place...
cherries for a couple of years if we do that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you should still get... No, your lower branches should still bloom and give you some fruit, depending on how big the tree is. You may not get as many, perhaps, but still, you should still get some fruit, assuming that it's got the nutrients stored up. That's the challenge with this crummy weather we've had this summer, that the trees in general haven't been able to make as much nutrients, mm-hmm. store as much nutrients, say, as they did last year, which was beautiful and sunny for so much of the summer. So that by itself may affect how much fruit we get next year, even with or without pruning.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Well, good. Well, it's good to talk to you, and you have a good rest of the summer this weekend.
Oh, I hope so. I hope, yeah. We've got some nice weather. We better take advantage of it while we can.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
For the call. Okay. Well, that's a good good topic to think about there, pruning and the effects of pruning on fruiting, not so significant as compared to just the sunshine over the season.
Right.
So probably safe to anticipate slightly less abundant fruit on trees next year as a result of just how many gray days we've had this season.
Right, right. So again, this would be a good time of year, just thinking ahead, I mean, kind of, you know, planning ahead, really to use later, not yet. Well, I mean, if you can get seaweed now or seaweed later into October, November, even December, go ahead and bring seaweed up to your trees, put them around the trees, I should say, underneath the drip lines, you know, out near the outer edges of the tree branches, and just put it out there so that some of those nutrients can be leached down into the roots for their benefit. We don't want to be fertilizing those trees this time of year, but again, think about very late, much later fertilizing, even October fertilizing potentially, slow release stuff, where you might be poking holes, again, out there around that drip line and putting in some slow release fertilizer. Again, do a little research on some tree fertilizer. And again, I know you get even more rain than we did. We ended up with 25 inches of rain in June, July, and August here at my house, and as much as 48 inches in downtown Douglas. I don't know what you got in Petersburg, but I wouldn't be surprised if it might have been more than that. So all that leaching takes nutrients away and causes acidity, tends to cause the soil to be more acid. So even using some lime around your trees or some wood ashes around your trees this fall could be beneficial too.
Uh-huh. Okay, so these are good tips to kind of, just recognize some of the consequences of a nonstop rainy summer is
yes.
Depleting the richness of the soil around the trees.
Yes.
But we don't want to overweight.
And then, I mentioned about poking holes. Again, planning, even doing something similar, if you don't do it this fall, again, first thing in the spring, as soon as the ground thaws out. So that might be late March, early April, or somewhere in there into May. Again, you can do that same thing, the poking the holes in the soil, like getting down there 6 to 8 inches, and again, putting in some fertilizer into the holes. You know, you can look for recommendations on that online or for specific fertilizers, you know, specific fertilizers for apple trees, fruit trees in general.
Mm-hmm. And the fertilizing that you want to avoid for right now, that's because you don't want to stimulate new growth right at the end of the season, which would just be a waste.
Exactly. Yes. So again, you know, no nitrogen. You know, when we've got our NPK numbers on the bag, the box, or whatever, we don't want to give them nitrogen now. That could stimulate new growth, as you say. The phosphorus and potassium, that's much better. And that's something that even if you look for fall lawn fertilizing, which I'm, you know, we can kind of mention briefly, that again, it's a very low, very low nitrogen fertilizer that lawns get also, as the last thing. You know, you do one final mowing, maybe in early October, and then a fall lawn food or something like that too, for the same reason. The strength, you know, goes, the roots are still growing as long as the ground is not frozen. That applies to the trees, it applies to our, bulbs that we'll be talking about to come. And garlic too, but again, we don't want to stimulate that above ground growth at this time of year.
Yeah, makes good sense. So nitrogen is the thing to not be using kind of all across the garden just at this stage of feeding the soil, and instead just start kind of bolstering the nutrient content, but not in such a way that'll stimulate new leaves.
Yep.
Okay, that's a good tip to leave people with for today. And, yeah, we'll pick it up again next week. Lots of work to do, lots of sunshine to enjoy this weekend. So that's a welcome blessing. And I hope everybody can have some fun and get some gardening done.
Yeah, improve everybody's mental health.
Much needed. Okay, well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, Ed. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Till then, Warren.
Till then. Okay. In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Always a good opportunity to put your mind in the garden, too, and start thinking about the best kind of chores. And we want to say thanks to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They've got bouquets by the jar and even subscriptions available of colorful blooms. They're at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. with delivery available even in the evenings. Every day but Wednesday, it's the Flower Farm, 772-3464.